This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Hope you have had a great weekend. Thanks for capping it off with us. We like to refer to ourselves as the Sunday cherry on top. How about that? See, Doc? I think of these things on the fly, mostly on my drive-in.
I can tell.
You can tell. Thanks. I appreciate it. I'm with the jokes. Let me handle that. This has been a busy few months, I would say, as I think it started off in Ferguson, Missouri, and then it went to New York, and then it came right here to the Valley. It's here. We are knee-deep in the issue of police. I would say police intersecting with race relations at this point, as we're seeing white police officers kill unarmed black men, and you get those two involved, and you have basically a Molotov cocktail.
And you have something that I've been observing going on for at least 40 years, and the story hasn't changed. And I got stimulated on that. I was reading Monica Lindstrom has a show on here, follows ours. She's an attorney here in
the
town.
Agenda with the Monica agenda. Lindstrom and Joe Heisinger. Real quickly though, you have background in policing, so I want to get that.
There was one statement that she made that I realized it just resonated with me. Okay. In her blog, she wrote, "I can't explain why society thinks the way it does and how to fix our belief system. That's better left to sociologists." I am a sociologist by training. Once upon a time.
And you were a cop. I want that to be known. Yeah. You were a police officer.
I was a police officer.
Okay.
And in fact, I spent a year in a major academic research project investigating exactly the kind of factors that get involved in these kinds of incidents. And I'll add to that, I've spent the last 40 years, most of it since then, kind of moved off of this, but studying how public opinion and how the public reacts to that. And so I have multiple perspectives on this. Now, Monica pointed out that there was three common threads in all of these things: Ferguson, New York, Phoenix, there's others, but white officer, black victim, deceased was unarmed, deceased ran from the officer, or somehow disobeyed an order. That's kind of the fact set that we start with.
Sure.
And there the stories diverge. The first thing, and there's very, very predictable narratives that come up. People describe this. On the police side, it's risk. We have it, police say, and their supporters. We have a tough job. We encounter people who are not nice. Their job is dangerous, and we have a right to minimize personal risk. All of these statements are true, but they are countered by other statements that are equally true. One, risk is part of the job. You know, you can't expect to go into policing and have zero risk. And if you take your own risk to zero, you are putting other people at risk. That's the nature of ambiguous circumstances. Secondly, the argument goes that this degree of risk can be overstated. It's not even in the top 10 among risky professions, jobs that have fatalities.
Okay.
You know what the top two are? One is logging. And two is fishing.
Commercial fishing.
Commercial.
Not the fishing that I do.
Not your fishing.
Right. Commercial fishing.
Yeah. You might catch a hook on your finger.
I understand that, but I have to stop you there and really point out the fact that the logging and commercial fishing has nothing to do with bad guys.
Yep.
The fish aren't fighting back. There is no potential for a tuna to jump on the boat and shoot me, nor is there potential for a log to take off, run, find a gun, and shoot me.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's why it looms larger. The nature of the risk that the police are involved with has a kind of a scary component.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? It does. Yeah,
and so that's why it resonates. But just to put it in perspective, it's not the most dangerous job in the world. It's not in the top 10. It's up there, but it's not in the top 10. The second element, and where the stories diverge, is what is this about? Is this about bad guys, or is this about racial disparities? Police side always comes and points out, usually the person involved is not a choir boy, often a criminal record, often not a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
The counter to that is, hey, wait a minute, but let's look at the racial disparities that are involved in some of this. Police are blacks are more likely to be arrested, more likely to be prosecuted, more likely to be convicted and given houses than whites. And the difference is not a small one. Incarceration.
But that gets into judicial. I think that crosses the line.
But it's just talking about, but this is part of the, yes, it's the whole system. It's not just police, but that's part of it. I mean, but they, none of that happens unless you get arrested. So arrest is the beginning.
Right. And I'm not arguing, by the way. I'm not arguing the stats. Right. The stats are the stats.
Six times. More likely to be incarcerated than what? Somebody might argue maybe there's more crime, whatever, but not six times. Okay. So the question then becomes, you know, you've got some racial stereotyping involved, and those have an effect. So what do you get? Both sides presenting their arguments in a way that becomes very – we've heard these arguments before, you know, and you could talk about Ferguson, talk about New York, talk about Phoenix, but these arguments are the ones that you're going to hear over and over. And they have a kind of a sameness to it. And we tend to make judgments based on how we come down on this before we hear all the facts. By the way, kudos to the chief in Phoenix, statement in reference to the incident in Phoenix is, let's reserve judgment, let's get the facts in.
Right. Which is, I think, he got ahead of it. He got ahead of it, unlike we saw in Ferguson.
Yeah. You know, a police chief is in a really tough place because their officers, their guys expect them to defend the position. And when you do that, it can come across as insensitivity to what might be an ambiguous situation. I think that it's not an easy thing for a police chief to get up there and say, listen, let's reserve judgment. Let's get all the facts.
Right.
He'll get some flack from his own members.
Okay, but especially coming on the tail of two very high-profile cases that didn't seem to go the way of one side, both of them not going the way for
the
one side.
Well, they came down the same way.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Something that when this happens in Phoenix, that's the context.
You know?
And people in Phoenix are going to look at this and say, you know, are we going to end up with another whitewash here?
It wouldn't have been a big – I think it wouldn't have been as big of a deal had it not been on the tail of the two high-profile cases that we just saw in the last month.
And by the way, I'm not prejudging those two cases at all. I'm saying I think the most damning evidence is the statistical evidence about how often things happen, how infrequently police are charged, et cetera. That doesn't mean that in these two particular cases, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff that was very ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. Right, you know? Right. And by the way, when you say reserving judgment, I want everybody to understand this. You did not see what the grand jury saw, period. In any of these cases, you did not see what they saw. Did it go perfectly? I don't think it did, but there is no perfect system. By the way, if there's a perfect system, don't get involved because you're going to screw it up. Yep. There's no such thing as perfection in our society. I want to get to the narratives of both sides and how they just
how the public reacts to them.
And how the public reacts to them when we come back on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we are talking basically the narratives that we have seen and that we are witnessing and that I would say that we have witnessed for decades when it comes to police-involved shootings, especially when it's a white officer and a black victim. Dr. O'Neill comes from a very... I would say you're the pro on this. If you're not a pro on anything, you're the pro on this. You have, which you're a pro on a lot of things, by the way. But this one, in fact, you were a police officer. You have studied all of this. You have stats. This is your wheelhouse. I can't think of a better topic for you to discuss. But how does society react to these narratives when we're dealing with it's the white cop,
sure,
he's a racist or not, and it's the black victim, well, he was just a thug or he was just an innocent victim?
Let's review the narrative. You know, the police statement almost always said, well, he was resisting arrest, he acted suspiciously, he didn't obey my orders, he possibly reached for something I thought was a gun. And then, you know, probably he's not a choir boy, he has a bad record, he's been in trouble, whatever. High likelihood of that. The victim, I had my hands up, or at a very minimum, you didn't have to shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I didn't do what you said, but that's not an excuse. Evidence, usually there's some ambiguity, particularly pre-cameras. There's a he said, she said kind of aspect to this where the stories diverge. Cameras are a plus, But you'll notice in the New York City case, we have a perfect record of more very close to what happened, but there's still ambiguity about interpreting it. So cameras aren't a panacea, though. I think they're a big plus. So how does the public react? Well, this is a case story, black and white. Mm-hmm. Overwhelming proportion, almost every case. I saw the figures on Ferguson, but it fits the pattern. Overwhelming proportion of blacks identify with the victim. Whites, more ambiguous, more split, a little more likely to identify with the police. But that the interesting thing is blacks are nearly unanimous, whites more split. Mm-hmm. In the case of Ferguson, I saw a poll data on that. About 90% of blacks identified with the victim, thought the victim was right, more or less. 50 to 60% of the whites with the police. Well, why that disparity? Well, we all look at life through the prism of our own experience.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's our reality. It's very, very real to us. Well,
and we fought segregation for a very long time, yet we self-segregate, and we look at the world through our own either white or black eyes.
Here's the question. You ever been pulled over by a cop?
Yep.
You fear for your life?
No.
Probably not. Okay. Black parents, I've listened to dozens and dozens of these interviews describing what they call the talk.
Yeah,
their young
absolutely.
Sons, which
talk,
says,
yeah.
How do you behave when you encounter police so you don't get shot?
Chris Rock did a complete parody on this. Did you see that? On how not to get shot by a cop.
Yeah, and it was hilarious.
It was
and
hilarious.
Sad at the same time.
Well, it was
so,
funny and sad because there was a lot of truth to it.
But this is real. I mean, we hate to argue always by anecdote, but sometimes it really explains. One 22-year-old man of really imposing stature, black guy, was stopped and detained by six police officers who pulled their gun on him. He was evidently suspicious. The young man was named Corey Booker. He had just graduated from Stanford, and he was on his way to fulfill his Rhodes Scholarship. But he came across as scary to those cops. And by the way, to force what I want to talk about in the next section, bad apple is not the theory that explains this. Those six cops were not all bad apples. They were all responding to the same thing. And so, I mean, 67% black, 3 of 53 officers black. Blacks get 86% of vehicle stop, 85% of arrest, and 92% of disorderly conduct arrest. By the way, disorderly conduct is a pretty good metric. Why? Because it's so what is
absolutely
you know, burglary is a burglary. Mm-hmm. But disorderly conduct is when
could be walking in the middle of the street like Mike
police
Brown.
Cop wants to get you off the street because you're doing something that really causes concern. It's pretty ambiguous. Okay, crime, by the way, is going down in Ferguson. So this high crime kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the perspective. Given that history, that they instinctively would react to that fact set and say, this may be like these other circumstances that I've experienced or people I know have experienced or I've read about that are out there. White's a little more ambivalent. I mean, we have a very kind of a love-hate relationship with the police, most whites. I mean, who are the police? Are they the heroes of 9/11, guys going towards the building, rescuing kids in dangerous circumstances.
Or just officer friendly, you know, walking the beat kind
of
thing.
But the police do, from time to time, do very heroic things.
Absolutely.
And we get pumped up. These people are saint-like, iconic figures. Then, on the other hand, we see something like Rodney King, which just pricks our sensibilities. And we watch that and we say, that's just not right. These people are monsters. Well, of course, neither is true. But the sense of disillusionment about the second set of circumstances is so much bigger because if we start out believing the first. By the way, same thing with our politicians. A lot of, you know, used to be, you see the puff pieces on the front about how this person's going to be our savior and do all these wonderful things. They're so perfect. And then inevitably we find out they are not perfect. They have feet of clay, equal to or worse than that of the average citizen.
Sure.
And we feel incredibly let down. So we have this ambivalence that comes out of the fact that our initial illusions are not borne out. So
then why do we not then? Then why not here? I'm not disagreeing with your stats by any stretch of the imagination. I've seen them. I believe them. I understand that. Why don't we hear about white cops killing white people, why doesn't that make headlines? Why does black cops killing black people, why does that not make
a headline? I think because of this sensitive racial overlay. You know, I mean, the fact is, I mean, you could raise other issues about this. Is black on black crime a bigger problem than police killings? Yeah, it is. Okay. But then again, most crime is intra-racial. If you are victimized as a white person, the person victimizing you is in all probability going
to
be white.
I agree.
But
well, that's back to my segregation lesson.
But if you say, you know, fear of crime, that conjures up racial images. And so that's what a lot of people have in the backs of their mind. That's why do you remember Willie Horton? You know,
yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Willie Horton, that was just playing into all those latent fears that a whole lot of this comes down to, and a whole lot of police behavior. People who studied this, police officers, and frankly, to a very great extent, the citizenry in general, have come to associate black men, young black men in particular, with danger. And a lot of police reaction comes out of this. So, for example,
because police are human. And understand this, because police are human. Understand that if you're driving in a squad car and you pull over anyone, I don't care who it is, that person is immediately agitated. That person is not happy. That person does not like the cop.
Yep.
And that's their job to walk up and not knowing if they have a gun, a criminal record, who they are, what they are.
And here's the biggie. If you're a black, that action of agitation is more likely to perceived as frantic motion with your hand in a person's mind who happens to be a police officer but has the same images as the rest of it, he is more likely to think, oh, he was reaching for a gun.
And understand
if it's you or I, well, they're reaching for their wallet.
Black people and white people react different ways. If you don't believe me, wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. Watch a comedy show at the Apollo and then watch a comedy show up stand up live in Tempe with a bunch of white people. Mm-hmm. They react differently when they're excited, happy, sad, mad, whatever it is. They react differently physically. So for a cop, they're human. I'm not justifying killing somebody for walking down the middle of the street. I'm not saying that's a punishable, that crime is punishable by death. But I'm saying is that the police officers are human. And I think that has to be, and they're not all racist, by the way.
No. That isn't where you have to go. But these are, understand, we have all these things in our history and they influence our behaviors.
We're talking the narratives with the most recent round of shootings with white officers and black cops, how we react to the narratives, and I want to get into this bad apples. It's just a few bad apples. See if there's a cure there when we come up next on The Think Tank, KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Just a bad apple. That's all it was, right? Just a bad apple. We deal with the officers in Ferguson, the officer in New York, the chokehold officer, and here in Phoenix. Just bad apple, right, Doc?
That is the most harmful analogy because I think it completely ignores the reality of what the issues are. And it's such a convenient cop-out. You know, somebody somewhere does something wrong, whether it's venal or it's just making an honest mistake. If we say it's bad apples, that keeps us from dealing with a systematic problem. And
let me ask you this. So are you saying, because it's always been my impression that there are more good cops than bad cops?
I think if we go to that trying to think about good cops and bad cops, I think we missed the point. Are there, you know what, in every department, are there a handful of cops that are problematic? Yeah, and you know what, in every squad, they know who they are. They know who the crazy guys are.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that's not the issue. I think what this is a situation, because if you got rid of all those folks, we'd still have these issues. This isn't an issue of good people and bad people. Let me explain. There's a study that was done, and I've alluded to it once before when we were talking about Abu Ghraib, you may remember, some months ago, and it explains this so perfectly. Group of psychologists by the name of Phil Zimbardo at Stanford did an experiment with Stanford undergraduates. He randomly assigned these undergraduate students to this one of two, you're either going to be the prison guard or you're going to be the prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he said to the prison guards, he said, listen, these are bad guys. Your job is to keep them in line and whatever. And they did the whole thing. They had mock arrests of the, quote, prisoner. Mind you, here's the powerful thing. They are randomly chosen. The groups of students in the two groups are absolutely identical to one another. And they're not bad kids, and they're not, you know, they're people who are, you know, would pass any screening test.
They're going to Stanford.
Yeah, right. Okay. This is the top of the top. Okay. And but the message went out. These are bad people. Your job is to keep them under control. And they watched the behaviors that ensued over the next several days. Mm-hmm. And it evolved in a very sadistic direction. They started with levels of brutality to the point where it was so extreme to close down the experiment.
Sure.
And I've seen interviews with these guys who are now middle-aged men. This was done some years ago. And they were just traumatized. They didn't think they had that in them. Okay.
Right.
Conclusion, it's about the messaging that you get. If the messaging you get from the society, from the top of the department is there's bad, dangerous people out there and you got to be careful. And other things play into that, like we need tanks and assault weapons and stuff like that from the military. That, you know, if it's that bad that we need a tank to, quote, fight crime, the whole we're fighting crime comes up. That's the messages. The community is filled with bad people and it's your job to control them. And that is the tone of the organization. Then that mentality plays into an ambiguous situation where you pull over some black kid and he's a little agitated and maybe he's not hyper respectful, upset, and you interpret that as hostile, and you're more likely to interpret that as hostile if he's black than a white kid under the same circumstance. And it explains a whole lot of this behavior. So police come to associate black men with danger. They interpret. And so a black citizen who acts exactly the way a white one did, more likely to get hostile reactions. So we go to, the Cory Booker case. Six cops all pull guns on this kid who is, about as clean as anybody you're ever going to encounter. Are those six cops happen to all be bad apples? I don't think so.
Okay.
They're reacting to a circumstance.
Hold on. I want to pump the brakes there because I think a lot of it comes down to power as well. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. Does it not?
Well,
cops are always in a power position. Always.
Well, in fact, the police culture and the training, the first thing they tell you in the police academy when you encounter any ambiguous situation, your job is to seize control of the situation.
Absolutely.
And you can argue about the nuance of that. There's a certain aspect of that where that's very functional to, you know, getting something done.
I would think.
I go into a domestic dispute, and I remember handling a bunch of those. And the first thing you want to do, you want nobody hits anybody in my presence. The first thing you tell everybody, and by the way, the old law on that was different from the current law. Back when I did this, you couldn't arrest anybody for misdemeanor not committed in your presence. So you walk in, and the wife has a bloody nose. Now they get arrested. You couldn't do it then. But the first thing you told everybody was, anybody hits anybody while I'm here, they're going to jail.
Right. You treat them like your kids.
Well, and
hands off.
And what you're trying to do is take violence away from the current equation. You may be all worked up, but everybody, this is the first way of seizing control of the circumstance. So the police are told, seize control of the circumstance. That can be interpreted on the other side as aggressive. Some people don't react to that as well as others. But when you react with if you react in, equally aggressive, that can appear to be threatening. And especially if you have this override of racial context, now that's hostile. Maybe you're a bad guy, you're anti-police, maybe you're a criminal. I'm going to interpret actions in light of that.
Or survival.
But here's the point if there was only one takeaway from this whole discussion, I would ask people to take, it's not about bad apples. When you have six times the arrest rate and all this other stuff coming over and over, I can tell you that a lot of times these guys who are involved in this will be the guy who, 6 months before did something that was heroic. It's not like you got, overwhelming numbers of police are right, sure. And yeah, are there a couple of bad? Yeah, oh, sure, there are. But that's not the problem here. I'm not saying, if you have somebody who's off the reservation, so to speak, and kind of crazy, you don't want them in. But I'm saying even if you got rid of all the handful of bad apples, this problem would not go away. This is not a bad apples problem. This is a top-down messaging problem? What is it that comes down from the society and from the police department that's, are we saying, listen, your job is to control these SOBs?
Yes.
Okay? If that's the message that comes down, and that message comes down in armament and tanks and all this other kind of stuff, you know, when you have a, you're having a demonstration and people are upset about this, you come out with overwhelming force in full riot gear.
It's the militarization of the police.
You're communicating to the police that you're about to engage in a violent situation and we have to protect ourselves, okay? As opposed to going out there in shirt sleeves and talking to people one-on-one at a human level without the face mask and all the rest. There is huge differences by department in the kind of messages that go out, and historically the places that give the militaristic, you know, you go out with a very militaristic approach, you're probably going to be perceived as a hostile invading armory.
Well, you talk about going from top down. I'm not just talking about police chiefs. When you say top down, I think from our federal government on the way to speaking of this 1033 program, mm-hmm. where they're giving our right here in Arizona, giving our officers, our sheriffs, tanks, helicopters, yeah. armor gear, assault yeah. rifles, all of that stuff. So they've gone from officer friendly to SEAL Team 6.
Yeah. And the point is, what is the message to the individual street cop when you do that?
Don't even worry about the individual yeah. street cop. How about me, Joe Citizen, when mm-hmm. I see a cop that used to just have a belt on, thing weighs like 20 pounds, but he used to have mm-hmm. a belt on, blue, you know, badge and the blue yeah. shirt badge, and then that's it. Now they're showing up and they've got these big flak jackets on under their they look like they are coming to take care of a situation that I feel didn't happen.
And what it says is when you're wearing all that, you're expecting that kind of trouble.
Exactly. And it makes the person on the other side, makes them agitated. It escalates the situation. Just their visual cue that they're getting from the police officer.
Your first reaction is something bad is happening here.
Yes.
On both sides of the line.
And then nature takes over.
Yep.
You have fight or flight, yep. right? You're yep. not going to run away from yep. a cop. So your natural desire is to fight the cop, and yeah. not physically. It might be verbally or things like
the
that.
The cop with a flak jacket yeah. and a mask over the... You're not going to walk up and engage them in a conversation.
1033 no. program, absolutely amazing. I want to stay on this. I want to talk about solutions.
All right.
I want to talk about solutions when we come back, because is there a solution, and how do we do that? How do we implement that? That's what we do here on The Think Tank and KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
So is it bad apples? Is it racism? Is it power corrupting police? What is it? Why are we seeing now? Now we see three, and it came right here to the Valley, a white police officer shooting an unarmed black man. Is this systemic, or is this something that we just see in the news because, hey, it's the flavor of the month? Remember when we were talking about Ebola?
Yeah.
Remember we were talking about Flight 370? Yeah, forget about all that nonsense. We have cops now. We have cops. Cops are killing everybody. If that were the case, there needs to be a solution. Even if that isn't the case, which I believe it isn't, I don't think there's a rash of white cops killing black men, but there needs to be a solution as well.
I would say, number one, put this bad apple business to bed. Anybody uses that phrase in any attempt to explain you are the problem, okay?
Okay.
The problem is bigger than a couple of... This shows up too many places, too many times. Where the officer involved had no prior history of any particular issue. And I'm not saying there probably are bad apple. I mean, every profession, including the priesthood, okay, has a small number of people. And I'm not saying you don't deal with that. But if you stop there, I absolutely guarantee you this goes nowhere. My biggest suggestion would be the following. Recognize that there are these two narratives and that they're both true. Okay,
and we all, two narratives.
The narratives. Okay, the police narrative. We got a tough job. We're fighting bad guys all the time, and we live in a hostile world. Mm-hmm. Okay, from the minority perspective, it's hey, we are getting singled out. We are getting arrested six times the rate, and we do the same thing white guys do. And we're getting shot at for this. Okay, the first thing I would say to each side is, you'd have no problem recognizing your own narrative. Really take ownership and grasp and embrace the other guy's narrative and recognize that it has truth in it.
So seek to understand before being understood. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Covey.
See, right? I learned that. Yeah, how about that? Covey, see what I do?
Absolutely. Because while we're shouting, what happens, what we've done on this over and over, we shout out our own beliefs and we say them over and over and over, and it's real easy to take them in because, A, they have lots of truth in them, and B, there are truth. You know, that reflect our experiences. And, you know, if you're white or you're black, that you bring a different set of experiences to the table. And so they just resonate. And I want to say to you on my side, you know, listen to me. Boom, 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 boom. This is what. And you're not listening to that. You're coming back at me with your side. And you listen and you say the same thing. And we are screaming at one another. We're talking back at one another. And we are not really taking. We are conjuring up the next argument that we're going to make rather than really embracing and owning. And I think from the standpoint of the police that says, you got to look at this racial disparities thing and say, you know, we don't, as individuals, we don't think that we're behaving in a way that's driven by race. But the statistics don't lie. There is a component on that that's undeniable. Now, in these individual circumstances, I got to tell you, I don't know. In each one of these cases, wherein the actual objective, if there is such a thing, objective truth lies, because there is ambiguity, and it is very hard to make the case that I know absolutely. You know, take the New York case, where the whole thing was videoed.
Okay? Yes.
Trivial crime, guys selling loose cigarettes, six police officers there. And by the way, so many cops. Why? Truth is, the more cops you have there, the less violent you have to be. One cop to take down this 300-pound guy is probably going to have to take out a nightstick and whack somebody in the shins or something.
Right.
Six cops there, you grab an arm. It shouldn't have. And the argument is made, and it's a reasonable one. Why did you have to put this person in a chokehold? You didn't.
I agree. We know that.
But I would say this. I looked at that film, showed me something else, too. This was not Rodney King. There was no anger there. There was nobody who was trying. I am absolutely convinced nobody was trying to do him harm. I think it was a stupid choice.
It was
against policy and all that. But you looked at the demeanor of the police. He was incensed or anything. They said, you know, you can't do that. You've broken the law. You're under arrest. And then you know, a couple of arms got grabbed, and one officer, evidently, and it was obscured by the video, but somebody was standing in front of him, but put him in a chokehold, and he starts saying, I can't believe, I know what happens under those circumstances. You know, probably almost everybody who's engaged in what sort of mild resisting arrest is going to say, loosen the cuffs or do this, and he probably didn't believe it.
Here's the deal. His head wasn't going to flee, okay? Yeah, the only thing he was going to use to flee were his arms and his legs, all of which were secured at the time. He didn't need to get the guy in a chokehold.
Absolutely. But you look at the demeanor. It wasn't Rodney King in that there was nobody who was displaying any anger.
Two sides to that story as well. Drugs were involved as well. But let's go back to this. I want to go back to solutions here. My thing is, you look at the black community. I don't hear a lot of black men aspiring to be police officers, a lot of Hispanic men aspiring to be police officers. It seems that because we're treated nicely by the cops as white guys, we think, oh, cops is a, maybe I didn't aspire to be a cop, but it's a career choice. It's a career option. I don't see a lot of black men thinking policing career option.
Actually, no, it's a decent job. You know, especially if somebody with less than a college education, it is a decent paying job.
Of course,
it's an attractive job.
Historically
has not been on that. No shortage of applicants. The problem with recruiting minority police officers is they got this restriction in terms of prior arrest, and you have 1/3 of black American teenagers who've been in prison.
I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes, I don't think if what you say is true, and I'm not saying it isn't, that a black man fears for his life every time he's pulled over if he sees a cop, I never would think that black man would say, good career option for me. I'm going to go strap on the blue.
There's some ambivalence. I can tell you as a police officer, and I was in Baltimore, and it was in the 70s, and highly, you know, I mean, it was interesting. You had a 50-50 a black white city at the time. Police department's like 95% white, and so the blacks.
I think it comes to that.
They were constantly challenged, and the phraseology was put on, quote, whose side are you on? That's a tough one.
I can
imagine. That is a tough one.
I can imagine. And then another thing that we're not going to be able to get over, I'm sorry, I don't know how you do it, and you as a former police officer, I think you can help me out with this. I believe, in watching all of these cases and reading the same stats that you were reading earlier, is that there's power involved. And when you are in a position of power, it is very difficult to remain, I would say, how do I put this, to not take advantage of the power is really what I would
say. Back to the Zimbardo prison experiment. Same thing.
Right.
And by the way, you know what that says. The implication of that isn't that the police officers are somehow some different group of people that are power hungry. It's the nature of what the job says to you.
It's human nature.
Okay?
It's human nature. If you're a boss, if you make decisions in a company, that power is addicting. It has to be. It's human nature to want to wield that power for your own almost entertainment.
Especially if the message you get from the society and from the top of the department is your job is to control these SOBs.
That's okay. Right.
As opposed to your primary job is to keep people safe and to use that power with as much restraint as possible. That's a very different message, and it's not very often the one that individual police officers get from their hierarchy.
I talked to a retired police sergeant, Paul Penzone, and I asked, I said, you know, why, especially in the Michael Brown case or the one we saw here in Phoenix, why not shoot to wound? Why not wing a guy? Why not, you know, why shoot to kill? He brought this to Michael. He said, we aren't going to guess. We aren't going to ask. We need to neutralize the threat immediately. And that's what we're talking about.
And I'll tell you another one thing. Nobody's that accurate to shoot to wing. Okay. And the other thing is, if the training I got is you don't shoot that weapon unless killing the person is justified. Okay.
Got
in
it.
Other words, it should that and that is such a heavy duty level of requirement that it should constrain your willingness to pull your gun in the first place.
Will this change?
I got to tell you, I look at the narrative right now and I look at the narrative 40 years ago. It hasn't moved an inch.
I look at the trajectory, though. We see of the militarization of our police forces, things like that. We're going the wrong way. Yeah. Whether it's going to change, I don't think it's going to change for the better.
It's seeing the world as good guys and bad guys. Too often, black teenagers are seen inherently as bad guys. And that's you got to get past that to look at individuals and sort out the bad guys from the Cory Bookers.
The old movies. Good guys wore white. Bad guys wore black. There has to be some sort of tie, I'm telling you. Holy cow. Hey, thank you for spending some time with us. We had a great time today. Doc O'Neill, thank you so much. It was a good discussion. You are the pro at this.
Reluctantly.
Yeah. That is true. Hey, have a great weekend. The agenda is coming up next right here on KTR News.